This is David Kaplan on ESPN 1000, Chicago's home for sports. Thanks for listening to the Cap and Company podcast, presented by Coors Light. Stay inside and buy your Coors Light online. Find out how at get.coorslight.com. Coors Light, take time to chill.
You're listening to Cap and Company. See what Sparkles is up to on Twitch.
Follow ESPN 1000 Chicago today. Cap and Company.
ESPN 1000, Chicago's home for sports.
Welcome in to Cap and Company on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN Chicago app. I'm Chris Black along with Jesse Rogers. If you want to join the show today, you can call us at 312-332-3776. Watch us on Twitch, the channel ESPN 1000 Chicago. We're going to talk some baseball now, Jess.
We certainly are. You can listen to his podcast daily at ESPN.com, and his Sunday column is a must-read. We go to Buster Olney, and of course, he's our Sunday night sideline reporter as well, though I'm not sure how you're going to be doing it this year, Buster, from your home. Is that how you're doing the sideline reporting?
I don't think they've announced anything official, but I think that there's a pretty good guess. I feel like that the KBO broadcasts from South Korea are a good indicator of where baseball announcers are going to be in 2020.
Yeah, good point. All right, Buster, let's get right to it. This is one of those stranger days in the history of the game. Players coming in, driving into the parking lots at their stadiums, getting tested, and then going back to their hotels or apartments or houses to wait for the results. And then they'll start up at this, you know, summer camp spring training 2.0 on Friday if they pass, of course. What's the expectation around baseball? I mean, we're talking dozens, we're talking hundreds that are going to test positive and will be taken out of the mix for a bit. What do you think?
At least dozens. There is a lot of trepidation about this because there's no one to blame for this situation. But for baseball, as I wrote the other day, for baseball to start right now, given the recent outbreaks that we've seen in so many key states that for baseball, it's like dropping a sailboat into the water just as the hurricane appears on the horizon. I mean, that's just and it's terrible luck for baseball that you suddenly have these, you know, outbreaks in Florida and Texas and Arizona, California, where so many players live. And so just in talking with officials at the team level in recent days, they think there are going to be some really high test numbers coming up. You know, how that'll affect the thinking, if in fact that's the case and we get, you know, let's say it was somewhere in the range of 100 to 150 positive tests, which would be something in a range of 7% to 10%, it's too early to say. But that is a fear among folks at the team level that the numbers are going to be really big.
Yeah, you bring up a great point just about timing, because a lot of players live in the off season in the Phoenix and area as well as Florida, and or they were at spring training and just stayed there the entire time. Ian Happ, you know, famously put together a podcast called The Compound. You know, they were in Arizona the whole time. So even if they didn't live there in the off season, they were there for spring training and stayed there. Now, as those states spike, they're flying into, let's say, Chicago, Guaranteed Rate Field to get tested, Wrigley Field to get tested. So they were in hot spots, and now they're returning to their home cities, possibly bringing the virus with them, right?
That's the concern, and it's why, you know, last week as this process really began to start, I mean, shoot, it was only a week ago that we, you know, Major League Baseball and the Players Association, you know, came up with something to move forward on. So many people at the team level were basically telling me, like, this is false hustle. We don't know how we're going to get through this. There's so many variables here. I've been joking with some of the folks who are at the head of baseball ops, like, because of how this is playing out, and there aren't really any experts on COVID working with the team level, Theo Epstein is now like the governor of COVID for the Cubs. You know, Rick Hahn is the governor of COVID for the White Sox, and all these teams have been scrambling to put some of these health and safety protocol in place. And meanwhile, swimming against the tide of what we're seeing across this country, which is really divided opinion on the coronavirus,
right,
where some players are taking this very seriously and they're all in on social distancing and wearing masks, and some of the teams are already getting some feedback from players that they feel like this is all overstated, it's not that big of a deal. It'll be very interesting to see, you know, how these teams come together and how their response is going to be once they get together in a team atmosphere.
Buster, listening to you over the weekend on Dari and Mel, suggesting that there's a 0% chance that we finish the baseball season. Have you changed your opinion on that, or do you think that there's more information that can then back up your opinion on the fact that we may not even get this season in this year?
Can you go less than zero, Buster, at this point?
Look, and I base that on what I'm hearing from the team level. I do think that the next 4 or 5 days are going to be absolutely crucial, because it's going to, you know, potentially reveal where baseball is. And, you know, if it turns out that the numbers are more modest than what some of the fears are, then, yeah, if baseball can get a beachhead and move forward. I know there's some club executives who say, look, if we actually get this started and the wheels start turning and people start understanding that on a day-to-day basis there'll be some players dropping out, you know, being treated, then coming back to the team, then we'll push ahead. And for Major League Baseball, for the Player Association, you know, there's a lot of money at stake. But I am concerned, you know, based on what I'm hearing from folks at the team level, that this could unravel. And let's face it, you know, the Russian roulette in this whole thing is that if you get, you know, God forbid, some really serious cases, or God forbid, something worse than that, that is going to change the conversation around baseball about this whole thing.
Yeah, I mean, Cubs pitching coach Tommy Hotovy revealed today, and he's doing a press conference as we speak, that he had it bad, and he's 38 years old.
Yep.
That's the sort of thing that would hit home, I believe. It's a lot harder to get your arms around this thing unless you know someone or have a celebrity. Well, here's someone in baseball, pitching coach, who's young, who had it bad. So that's the kind of thing that would resonate, I would think, Buster.
100%. And I also, I think that there needs to be absolute transparency about what the numbers are to inform the staffers like Tommy, to inform the players about what the context is that they're going into. Guys like Anthony Rizzo, John Lester, you know, who battled cancer in the past. They owe it to in Major League Baseball, the Player Association leadership. They need to make sure that those numbers get out there so people understand exactly what they're walking into. And you know, Joel Sherman of the New York Post did a story yesterday that, you know, they're talking about this issue and do they release the numbers publicly? You know, how much information is released specifically about each person? I don't think that it's imperative that they release the names of players, but I think it's absolutely imperative that the two sides agree that on a daily basis they're going to get the numbers of positive tests out there, so that as you know, these players make decisions, not only for themselves but for members of their families, they have as much information as possible. I'm kind of shocked that they're even debating over this. It feels like this already should be established, that yes, we're going to get all the numbers information out there as soon as possible.
Yeah, I pushed Jed Hoyer on this a couple days ago during a Zoom video thing, a Zoom presser, and you know, he mentioned getting the numbers out there, you know, kind of in passing. You know, we're going to have to play this dance, though, in terms of names. I mean, he said they won't announce if a guy's on the regular injured list or the COVID injured list. But then, of course, if they're taking batting practice and a guy that, you know, might have a twisted ankle is out there, we know he doesn't have COVID. If we don't see him for 4 days, he probably has COVID. So it'll be silly, this whole talking around it. I know there's HIPAA laws and all this other stuff, but this is, I'm with you. Transparency, and not just because I'm a reporter or a fan and I need to know. I think just for the entirety of this effort, I think transparency seems like it's definitely needed.
When I started writing about this on Twitter a few days ago, I got some feedback from some teams, because you guys have seen, like in the case of the Philadelphia Phillies, when they had a number of players test positive there, they were very specific about the numbers of players and the numbers of staffers that tested positive. But other teams have been more murky in their reporting. And what I've heard from teams is that Major League Baseball has been pushing them to be less specific. Under the current circumstance, especially with these spikes in numbers across the country, where yesterday Dr. Anthony Fauci is talking about, you know, the possibility we're going to have 100,000 positive tests in a given day sometime in the future if we continue the current trend, they have to inform the players. They owe it to the players. They owe it to the staffers. So and you guys heard the other day, the Minnesota Twins basically benched two of their coaches who are in their 60s All of that needs to be out there for these folks to make their decisions.
Plus, we're only talking baseball with Chris Bleck and Jesse Rogers in for David Kaplan today here on Cap and Company on ESPN 1000. Buster, a lot of this conversation has been about the spiking numbers, and I can't stop thinking about, did baseball just waste too much time in the summer trying to figure out what they were actually going to do, that we could have been playing baseball and they could have actually had the protocols in place while we were kind of waiting out this pandemic?
Yeah, and it's an interesting question because, of course, as you know, the Player Association believes that that the owners were essentially playing four corners offense and trying to run out some of the clock because they didn't want to have a longer season. Regardless of whether or not that's actually the case, the fact is, I felt like all along, I know Jesse does too, that baseball blew an opportunity to have the sporting stage all themselves at the beginning of July. And to have a, you know, really positive spin around the sport, to rebrand the sport. They could have done that if they had come to an agreement, but this relationship between the two sides is the most toxic that it's been in 25 years. I personally feel like the Players Association in recent years has gone to a strategy of non-engagement, and that contributed to this. And I felt like over the last 6 weeks before the actual decision to go ahead with baseball, that the owners had opportunities to be aggressive with their offers and to get the players into a place where they could have an agreement. But, man, there's such distrust, such suspicion. You know, I think in part because of in recent years, the absolute application of analytics on the management side, where you have things like service time manipulation with players like Chris Bryant.
You know, Buster, I was critical of that March agreement, not spelling everything out, but at least you could say, if you want to defend it, hey, it was late March. We didn't know what we were going to look like in April, May, June. But the meeting, the one-on-one meeting between Manfred and Tony Clark, what a debacle. That's like 12-year-old recess stuff. You know, he did this, I did that, he said that. I mean, to come out of that meeting and one side thinking one and the other side thinking something else, complete debacle in my mind.
There are two instances in the span of 3 months in which these two sides couldn't agree on what they agreed to.
Amazing.
And the March 26th agreement, as you guys know, for weeks, we were getting various stories from both sides about what the lawyers agreed to. And the same thing happened with the meeting between Rob and Tony, which is why I got to say, and I'm sure you've heard it too, Jesse, there is a lot of talk about we need to change the brokers at the table.
Yeah.
Because we can't repeat the debacle that we've executed with these two sides. My own belief is that it's going to damage baseball for a long time to come. And you hope that it's not merely the preliminary bout to the larger heavyweight fight that we have next year in 2021 because of the expiration of the CBA.
Yeah. Buster, if we actually get to playing games on the field and we look at the Chicago Cubs and the White Sox, which team do you think a 60-game schedule benefits them the most? A veteran-led team like the Cubs or a young upstart team like the Chicago White Sox with all these young players ready to go?
And I think the context for the respective teams is really important. You know, the National League Central is highly competitive, and on the other hand, if you're the White Sox, is a third of your games are against the Tigers and the Kansas City Royals. That would seem to be a real advantage, which is why I think in a 60-game schedule, I look at the White Sox as being more dangerous because of the nature of their division. And a big question, I think, is going to be about the Cubs, even if they played 162 games, okay, what's the nature, the quality of their starting pitching? That's going to be underscored with this sporadic training schedule that we've had this year where the starting pitchers got ramped up into mid-March and then they close it down. I've heard from managers that they think that the starters, as they return, are going to be somewhere in the range of 45 to 60 pitches. That's going to be a challenge for a rotation that's older.
Before we let you go, let's go bring this full circle here, Buster. Assuming hundreds and hundreds of players don't test positive, which would put a halt to a lot of things, starting with summer camp, can they play this game? I asked this at the beginning of the show. Can they play this game with chaos around them? Can they play if they had to play starting tomorrow in Phoenix, in Texas, in Florida, can they do it with hospitalizations rising? We couldn't do it in March, but can they do it now? I don't know.
You could try to do it, but they have to keep a running list of alternative sites with these teams traveling around completely at the mercy of the municipal and state and federal guidelines that apply. For example, you guys have been reading about the Toronto Blue Jays, where they had to get special permission for the Blue Jays to go into Toronto because Canada had put a requirement of 14-day quarantine for anyone coming into the country. I still wonder, and they just got that waiver yesterday, I still wonder if there'll be a public sentiment of, wait a second, why did a group of ball players coming from Florida suddenly get special permission to come here with teams like the Yankees and the Red Sox and the Tampa Bay Rays and other division rivals to follow? Why did they get special permission to come in? Because it's not like baseball is an essential. I there are other states that have the same questions, and those could change. Those variables could change day to day. I think that's part of the reason why a lot of people are pessimistic within the game and at the team level that they're going to be able to pull this off, that eventually all these variables are going to become so difficult to navigate for Major League Baseball.
Thank you, Buster. We appreciate
it. Great stuff, Buster. Really appreciate you coming on.
I appreciate it. Yeah, thanks for having me.
All right, stay in touch.
Buster Olney from ESPN on our Corona hotline here on ESPN 1000, the ESPN Chicago app.
He is a good guest.
Yeah.
He is a good guest.
Baseball reference, home run guest right there, Jess.
Home run guest.
Good job.
You got that right. Listen to this. So Tommy Hotovy, Cubs pitching coach, is holding a Zoom, and our producer Eric says he's been holding back tears talking about having the coronavirus. We're going to play some of that next, right, Eric?
He's still talking, so I'll let him finish, okay. And then when we can, I'll turn it around when I can.
And we'll talk to Steve Cishek, who got tested in the last 48 hours. Hopefully he's clear and ready to play. How many will test positive? That's a question coming up in the next couple days that will get answered.
We'll hear from him next.
You're listening to Cap and Company on ESPN 1000. Chicago's home for sports. This is Cap and Company. Follow on Twitter at The Cap Man.
ESPN 1000, Chicago's home for sports.
Chris Black, Jesse Rogers in for David Kaplan today. We go to John in Northwest Indiana listening to ESPN 1000. What's up, John?
How you doing today, guys?
We're all right. What's up?
Hey, just wanted to call and tell you that might not have been a threefer, but I think I got Jesse beat.
Oh, go ahead. Give it to us.
Let's hear it.
Well, I was teeing off on one hole. I got to say, I play my slice usually, so I aim off to the left to make it go right. Well, I happened to hit it straight, went straight into the tree, caromed off the tree, and went right back onto the green behind us and into the hole.
Oh, no. No, it didn't.
Into the hole you were playing?
The previous hole.
Oh, previous hole.
The previous hole.
Oh, well.
That's incredible.
That's incredible. Doesn't help your score at all.
I didn't know where it went until the foursome behind us came up and tossed the ball to me. It was like at a charity outing, so everyone knew everyone.
It's pretty good. So you went from hole in one to what, like a six? Like, you got to pick that up at that point.
Yeah, it was picked up, and I probably had a 9 or 10. Of course, that was probably about the 14th hole, beer hole, you know. But hey, that's beside the point.
That's a good one, though. That's
Thank
a good
you one, John. We appreciate
it. Great job.
Thank you.
Thanks,
appreciate
man.
What you do?
Thank you. We appreciate it. You know, Jess, what's funny about that to me is, there's these kids that during the quarantine or just normal day life, right? You see these TikTok videos and these videos on YouTube of like amazing trick shots.
Yes.
You could never in a million years try to do what John just did. Hit it against a tree to go behind you into the cup.
Right. I mean,
you could never do that.
That's rarer than a regular hole in one, right? I mean, you know, a regular hole in one, you got the green in front of you, par three, boom, you got a shot.
I would think
hit the tree and go in the hole is a one in a billion.
Any bank shot hole in one,
yes,
is definitely much more difficult.
It's more difficult, but I don't know if it's like worse, if that's the right word, than what I did. I think hitting it onto two different holes, trying to play my hole,
pardon the expression there,
was worse.
Yeah, no, yeah,
it was multiple.
True.
It involved multiple shots.
Because like what John
was saying, bad shots.
He plays his slice. So usually
it goes back right.
It would come back around, but instead he sculled it right at the tree.
Right.
Came right back. Have you ever done that where you hit the tree and it comes right back and it hits you? Or your partner
no,
in the cart?
I have hit the tree, but not come back. No, I have avoided the ricochet.
That's always funny when you hear it and then you immediately duck away.
Exactly.
Jesse, man. I want to ask you this because we're heading towards the 4th of July weekend. Last time you were on the show, hosting when Cap wasn't here, you talked about having grilling questions for Carmen.
Oh, yes. That's another thing I was bad at for a long time, but I'm getting better.
Have you improved?
I have improved. I'm down to two flips.
This is for a steak, right?
Steak, yeah.
Okay.
I was a multiple flipper. I was nervous. I was anxious. I would flip a lot. And obviously, I've been told and read that you shouldn't be flipping. It should be one flip. I'm down to two flips.
Right.
So I'm not perfect, but I'm close.
And all that flipping right at home between 9 and noon right here on ESPN 1000.
Right. It fit the concept of the show.
Absolutely. So I want to ask you this. As we head towards the 4th of July weekend, on the grill, what's your favorite meat on the grill? Do you have a list of your favorite meat you'd like to be on the grill? I've got three that are my go-to. I think number three for me, number three is obvious. Burgers. I get it. You could cook a burger better on a flat top, but still there's something about the burger coming off the grill that hits every time.
No doubt.
Burgers are great.
No doubt.
Cheese, without cheese, whatever you want to do. Right. Just give me a burger. Number two, give me ribs.
I haven't done ribs this year off the grill.
You should do it. Let them sit there for a few hours.
Right.
Ribs off the grill. Perfect.
Right.
My number one, though, I'm going to give you a brat.
Come on,
Cap. I almost called you Cap. Jesse, brat. I'm so used to when someone immediately dismisses my thought to just say Cap.
Right.
Jesse, brats. Brats off the grill. That's it. That's my winner.
Dogs and brats off the grill don't do it for me.
With yellow mustard.
I'm okay with that.
That's the best.
Yellow?
I don't need
fancy.
I'm
more of a spice.
I don't need some fancy stuff.
No surprise.
Old
school. When I cover games at Miller Park, man, I get a brat every single time. They do it well up there. No. I'm a steak and burger guy on the grill.
Steaks?
For sure.
Okay.
I agree with everything you said about burgers. But you know, I can't even think of grilling, of putting a steak on the stove necessarily. You know what I mean? Like, that's got to be on the grill for me.
We did steaks in the oven last night.
You can do it. But
you can,
burgers and steaks
on
the grill.
I'm better at cooking them on the flat top and then the oven than I am on the grill. When it comes to steak. When it comes to steak,
you can control it more.
I'm so much better at it. I always overcook my steak.
Now when I think about the burgers, I think I'm still more of a three or four flipper on the burgers. Because those are easy to flip. Steak, like, you leave it out there, whatever.
The people on Twitch can see. You're not supposed to be flipping these burgers like that.
I know. So steaks, I'm better. For some reason, I just can't stand there and look at a burger and not flip it. I gotta flip it. But
drink your beer instead.
Often really affects the taste. I put some garlic in and stuff. Yeah. I think flipping a steak affects it much worse if you're flipping it multiple times.
Right. You gotta let the crust build up.
Yeah.
If that's what you're looking for. So I personally, you know,
maybe I'll do ribs this weekend now that you mentioned
it. Or brats. Do some brats. What's
do you do the foil pan with the onions and the beer on the grill? Because that's
you
what
could.
I do. That's good stuff.
You certainly could.
You know what I like? Corn on the cob on the grill.
Yeah,
I like corn on the cob on the grill. Put it in tin foil, put it on the second deck, maybe on the first deck for a few minutes, and boom.
I only want that in the summer, though. Don't bring that nonsense in once we get to the fall or in the winter.
I'll grill in the winter. Yeah. I grill, but not. No, yeah. Corn on the cob is a summer.
Corn on the cob has to be in
the
summer.
Summer thing.
I see. There you go, Jess. Brats. That's what you need to do this weekend. Ribs and brats.
I'm going to do ribs. I haven't done that yet.
How would you go about doing this?
Well, we have
a gas
grill.
Would you smoke it? Get some hickory chips and put them in there?
Got a gas grill. So that's why I probably haven't done it because, I don't know.
Well, it takes time.
Yeah.
But you can leave it there for hours.
No, I know people that smoke their ribs and they just can't stop talking about it.
My dad does it. He did it 2 weeks ago.
He probably talks about it for 2 weeks.
No, but he's modest.
I smoked those ribs.
No. See, my dad is sneaky great at that. So he lets you decide. And then everyone that has the ribs talks about it for weeks. They were fantastic.
If they're that good, then
they're really good.
You'll get everybody else talking about it.
Now I'm ready to grill. All right, let's go to John Naperville. John, you're on ESPN 1000. What's up, John?
All right, so you're doing the brats, right?
Yeah.
Okay, so you grill the brats, make them nice and juicy. Then you put them in the pan that's already not boiling hot, but water's hot with onions and beer in it. You put them in afterwards. That way you don't lose any of the juices.
Hmm. See, there you go. Thank you, John. Appreciate the tip.
That definitely sounds good.
Mark in Buffalo Grove, you're on ESPN 1000.
Hey, guys. Jesse, you're killing me with how you flip your burgers, man. So if anything, you can flip the steak, but don't flip the burger.
Oh, once really?
And really important thing that everyone makes a mistake on, make sure your meat's room temperature when you put it on the grill.
Yeah.
Or it's going to cook very uneven. But with the burger, make sure, when you start to see some of the blood on the top of it, then you flip it. Burger should only ever be one flip. A steak, depending on your thickness, you can flip it a little bit here and there. You know, if you're doing a really thick cut,
right,
maybe do it in direct heat and then sear at the very end. Something smaller, you sear, you know, high heat, and then you should be good to go. But yeah, don't flip your burgers, room temperature, and the meat.
All right, I gotta reduce my burger flipping. That's next. I reduced the steak flip, and I gotta do the same.
And we're gonna talk to Steve Cishek coming up next, right, Jess?
White Sox reliever, former Cub. He got back to town a couple days ago and took his COVID-19 test.
So we'll talk to him next.
You're listening to Cap'n Company on ESPN 1000.
Chicago's home for sports.
Did you miss some Cap'n Company? Your podcast is ready. Chicago's home for sports is on the all-new ESPN Chicago app.
This is Cap'n Company on ESPN 1000.
It's Cap'n Company on ESPN 1000, the ESPN Chicago app. I'm Chris Black, along with Jesse Rogers, sitting in for David Kaplan today. And Jesse, we go on out to the Corona Hotline to talk some baseball.
Yes, sir. There's been a lot of players that have played for both the Cubs and Sox. This next gentleman will do the same, though his Sox debut has been delayed. It is now new White Sox reliever Steve Cishek, just back in town as spring training 2.0 summer camp is about to begin. Steve, how are you feeling today?
I feel great. How are you guys doing?
And that is a question that has double meaning these days, right? How are you feeling? You took your COVID-19 test a couple days ago. Have you gotten the results?
No, we should get them today, though, which would be nice because right now I'm throwing into a net in the alleyway here in Chicago the past few days. So, you know, hopefully we get those tests back soon and we can get to work inside our own stadium.
Tell us what it looked like over at Guaranteed Rate Field. I assume that's where you took the test. I mean, give us the specifics. You drove up there just in the parking lot. What did you have to do?
Yeah, so we drove up, you know, parked in a spot. You walk in with a mask on. You check in, sign the paperwork saying that you've read the, you know, rules and stuff. And then you go in. They sit you down. You do a little finger prick test to see if you have the antibodies. After that, you have to do a saliva test, which took a lot longer than I thought it would. You have to keep spitting into like a little kind of like a vial up to a certain point in the line, not to be graphic, but trying not to, you know, have a lot of foam in your spit, which I don't know how to control that. I'm not really a big spitsman, but if we just make it happen, you know. So I just sat there, kept spitting into a vial, and, you know, wiped my hands off. They clean the area, and you take off.
See, so take us through the process of Major League Baseball and the White Sox specifically getting you, the players, ready to arrive for this situation. Like, what was the protocol? Did they tell you to maybe self-quarantine for the last 14 days before showing up? What's the communication been like?
No, I can't speak for everyone. I think everyone's had a different experience. For me, personally, my wife and I decided that we're going to drive our family to Chicago, which we thought would be a grueling task with two young girls, but turned out to be awesome trip. But anyways, like, for me, I never really needed to get a hotel room or a flight. We still were paying rent, unfortunately, during this whole time, but I ended up working out. Now we have a place to stay. So we just drove up here. They asked if I needed a flight. I said no, so they'll reimburse me for whatever the cost was to drive, and that was it. I know some guys are staying in a hotel. They needed to get, you know, the room and lodging, the airplane stuff. It's almost like starting spring training all over again.
Yeah, just in another city. Now, you came from Florida, which is a bit of a hot spot. So I guess I'll ask you, will you be surprised if you test positive in either case, the antibody, or obviously having it right now? Would it shock you just because of the way you lived, or you were out in Florida and you just never know?
Yeah, I mean, obviously you never know, but I'd be pretty shocked because I know, you know, there's some people out there asymptomatic, and I haven't had any symptoms at all during this whole thing. I've felt, you know, healthy this whole time, so I would be pretty shocked if I had it. And we were relatively, you know, careful with this. Early on, for about little over a month, I just trained at home, threw into a net, stuff like that. And then when it looked like, you know, baseball is going to start back up, I had to throw to somebody. So, you know, that's when you start throwing to catchers and training a little bit more. But even then, like, guys were keeping their distance, wiping everything down, you know, we're being as safe as possible.
Do you feel comfortable playing this season?
I do, because, I mean, even then, when you're at home, in my opinion, when I was at home training, I felt like I was more at risk than all these safety protocols that they have here. You know what I mean? Like, there's no, I never got tested when I was at home. You know, like you guys said, you know, who knows if you have it. Here you're getting tested, what seems like every other day. You know, you have to have your mask on at all times in the locker room. There's so many safety protocols that, for me, it's like, how can I possibly get sick? But obviously, it can happen.
Yeah, I mean, what is the chatter with around the league a little bit? I mean, do you think it can? This whole thing can happen? Can you pull it off all the way through October? I mean, I guess nobody knows, but are you just simply hopeful, but you just don't know?
I think the talk, what I've heard, especially amongst our team, and then talking with some guys on the other team when I was back in Florida, is that it's going to be a commitment. Like, teams have to fully buy in to staying in when you're on the road, staying in, not going out at night, you know, not doing the things that you typically do, because you're just going to put the team at risk if you get sick by doing all that stuff. So there's going to be a lot of accountability going on. And I think that's, you know, super important early on, is to establish that trust with your team, hold each other accountable to make sure that you guys, you know, that the team can, you know, stay as healthy as possible going forward. Because if we lose a couple guys, it could determine the season for us too. But ultimately, you just don't want guys, obviously, to get sick and, you know, put themselves or their families at risk.
Well, I've gotten to know Steve because he was on the north side for a while. You're going to have to change your whole lifestyle, C-Shack. I know you. I mean, you're late night at the bars. Well, no, he's a nice family man. You're the opposite of the guy that goes out all night, aren't you?
Yeah, it's funny. I was talking to another player who's basically on the same wavelength as me, Blyer, who plays for the Orioles, and we're like, man, this is like a dream come true. All we got to do is sit in our hotel room. Sign me up. You know?
Video games in the hotel rooms. It's never sounded better, right?
There you go.
Well, you know, what's funny about that whole thing is, like, even personally, like, I've looked at it that way with my wife the last, like, couple months. We've kind of just kept our distance. If we have friends who we know are going out of their way to go out and to be around other people, we kind of have
avoiding them.
So, like, Steve, when you look at the team, do you think you'll get full buy-in into that same mentality heading into the season?
I mean, I think so. I mean, this is, like, a totally different, like, situation anyone's obviously ever been in. So I think the biggest thing, you know, for me personally, is like routine. I'm so routine oriented. All of us big leaguers are so routine oriented. It's like, all right, well, now you have to take your old routine, throw it out the window, and literally just start up a new one. And you know, I think guys will be able to do that. And in terms of personal life, I hope guys will really, you know, tone it back a little bit. And but it's no different for someone like me who's a family guy. I want to take my kids and go to parks and stuff like that, but I can't really do that because I'm going to put, you know, myself and my teammates at risk if one of us gets sick by going out. So we're trying to navigate that whole thing, really.
Yeah, I mean, if this was last year, you guys would have to put Brandon Kinsler in an isolation chamber or something, because you don't want what that guy has. But anyway, so Friday at White Sox Park, so it's a little different. There's only one diamond. I mean, how strange will this be to get work in to be ready for a 60-game season? I mean, you could still do it, but it's certainly going to be a lot different than what you do in Arizona.
Yeah, it's definitely going to be a lot different. I mean, we have groups. I don't know if every team is doing this, but we have, like, groups that we're going to be set in, where there's, like, five of us that show up at one point during the day. Oh, yeah, I think everyone has to do this, actually.
Yeah.
And five, you know, and so on for, you know, three times a day for the pitchers, three different segments a day. So, really, it's on the coaching staff, too. Like, they're going to be out there for a long time just wearing it. And so, and another thing, too, is I hope we take this, you know, pretty serious, too, because, you know, who knows. Some of our coaching staff could be more at high risk than us. So, again, we're just – the protocols keep it as safe as possible. I mean, it's over 100 pages. You know, that's way safer than anything I was doing back at home.
Do you feel that Major League Baseball has given you guys enough time to ramp up for this 60-game schedule?
I think that's a great question. I can't speak for everybody, but I know a lot of guys have had the opportunity to be outdoors and training and stuff like that. Whereas some other guys, maybe, you know, depending on where they live, a little bit more strict rules, you know, they haven't been able to. So some guys might actually not be as ready. I mean, I know for me, I've played catch 6 days a week, took Sundays off, and I've, my arm feels good. I literally just got done throwing. So, you know, I think other guys are going to be at different levels, and that's going to be up to the coaching staff to gauge where they're at.
Yeah, I was curious about your arm. I mean, I had somebody cynical in baseball text me once the season was said. The Angels will still have a reliever appear 60 times this year, even though
60 games.
Thought that was a cheap shot. Thought that was a cheap shot. But in general, here's my theory, and you tell me if it's right. If a pitcher stayed in shape during this pandemic, during the quarantine, certainly for this 60 games, you're going to feel as fresh as you ever have in August and September. But if you did not stay in shape, you have to worry about some injury concerns. Would I have that right?
Absolutely. I know this. When I came back from hip surgery in 2017, I was like a slow comeback. I got hit around early on with Seattle, and I finally started getting a feel for my stuff like 2 or 3 weeks into June. I started the season in May. And so once I finally got my arm going, everything felt good. I was the freshest I've felt all year because I you know, stayed back rehabbing for a mm-hmm. month and a half. And I got traded to Tampa, and I had my best year because I was fresh. Other guys were grinding in August. I'm like, man, I'm just getting broken in. So if guys literally stayed in shape, I think you'll see a lot of fresh arms out there. But it all depends what their workload was during the last few months.
Right. You're joining a young team that's up and coming, but there are some local expectations that the White Sox could possibly get to the playoffs. Now that it's a 60-game schedule instead of the 162, how do you think the mindset of the crew will be heading towards this really sprint, this stretch run that we're going to see for this baseball season?
Well, I know guys will be hungry. It was that way in spring training. It was really exciting to see these guys get after it, not only on the field but in the weight room and in their preparation. We're ready to go, and so I wouldn't be surprised if that just transitioned over. You know, Renteria is a fiery guy. It was really cool to see, and he's very passionate, very dedicated to the game, and wants to win. So that carries over to us, and obviously I expect us to do well this year. And we're getting some, key arms back too. You know, Carlos looks like he's ready to go. So I'm hoping he'll be ready to just jump out the gate, firing bullets in there. And so we're going to have some key guys come back because of this virus.
And you'll face, Bryant and Rizzo and these guys you were teammates with. You have some tips for your new teammates on how to get some of the sluggers out. How do you get Baez out? I think we all know, kind of, but,
I can't say that on air if he's listening with it. But I think he knows too.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, look, he's extremely talented. You just really can't make mistakes to guys like in that lineup. They're really good mistake hitters, and you just got to be on top of your game. That's what it comes down to.
Absolutely, Steve. Well, we hope the tests come back negative, and you're ready to go Friday, and the rest of your teammates, your new teammates, are ready as well. And we somehow pull off this season. I think it might be sloppy at first, but then it could get really competitive with such a short schedule. And then, of course, the playoffs are always interesting. So we wish you the best of luck.
Absolutely. Thank you, guys. God bless.
Thanks, Steve. That's Steve Cishek from the Chicago White Sox, Jesse, brought to you by the Corona Hotline here on ESPN 1000. Here's what I thought was really fascinating from what he said. Preparing for the season down in Florida on his own, he feels safer now because he's going to be back with the team because they're being tested frequently.
Right.
And that's the key here is, like, for all the naysayers to the professional sports leagues that are not going to be able to do this during the pandemic, I continue to go back to when I go to the grocery store and come home, I don't get tested. I'm not going and getting tested each and every day. Professional athletes are going to have the ability to know whether or not they have it or they don't have it. And if they don't have it, they're going to be able to kind of get this up and running.
Yeah. And the thing is, even though MLB is not playing in one place and creating a bubble like the NBA or NHL, they're still in a team bubble. And what Cishek said is so right. If you follow the protocols, yeah, meaning you go from the park, it's 60, 70 days here. Go to the park, go home. Go to the park, go to the hotel. You can survive this. You can get through this. And it's not like these players are probably worried too much about ending up in the hospital, but it still takes you out of your team if you test positive.
What do we talk about?
And if it infects a whole locker room, the team can't play.
Yeah, and what do we talk about? Each summer, teams coming together, getting through the dog days of the baseball season. There's going to be a lot of trust here. Do you trust your teammates? And do you all pull from the same end of the rope? Fighting for a championship, right? Like, because if everyone takes it seriously, you theoretically could find a way to be okay.
I think I'd probably worry about the teams that are kind of, you, even though nobody's out of it right away.
Or kind of out of it.
Yeah, they're kind of out of it after 2 weeks and just like playing out the string and they want to live their lives. At least if you have a goal to win a championship or whatever this is going to be called, you know, you're all pulling on the same rope. Once you're out of there, this short race, you might just be like, eh, whatever, I'm going out for dinner, right? And then, boom, you get infected. So
that's Jesse Rogers. I'm Chris Black. We're in for Cap.
You're listening to Cap and Company on ESPN 1000, Chicago's home for sports. It's Cap and Company. Follow us on the gram at Cap and Co. and ESPN _ Chicago.
ESPN 1000, Chicago's home for sports. Boom, 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 boom,
boom, boom. This hour of Cap and Company is brought to you by Blue Cross and Blue Shield of Illinois. Through life's ups and downs and for all the journeys ahead, you know what to bring. The card you can count on. Blue Cross and Blue Shield of Illinois through it all. Chris Black, Jesse Rogers, in for David Kaplan here on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN Chicago app. So Tommy Hatoviv comes out today publicly and he says a month ago, he had COVID-19. He was positive for COVID-19, and he spoke to the Chicago media just a little bit ago, and now we can hear from the Cubs pitching coach.
Symptomatic, not asymptomatic, so this is interesting stuff.
So here's Tommy Hatoviv just recently talking to the media.
It's just real. It's still kind of, raw in the fact that we just got through it, and to, like, relive it, obviously it affected us, pretty significantly for a month. Sorry. I felt it was important for me to kind of talk through what I went through, because too much of what's out there is the easy stories of what people go through with this. And, I felt, like I kind of mentioned this morning, that I went through some really, really weird stages through this whole process, like depression, thinking that, did I do something wrong? Could I have, how could I put my family, in that kind of situation? But, it obviously affects people differently. And if my story and my journey through this helps one person, realizes how severe this can get, and if that saves one life, then I want my story to be heard, because look, and again, I'm sorry I'm emotional because it's still fresh, I'm only 2 weeks from finally testing negative and 30 days of, quarantine from my family, like what my wife had to, what she had to, endure for a month. You just don't want to put anybody through that.
Wow. Tommy Hatoviv, Cubs pitching coach, just a little bit ago on Zoom talking with the Chicago media.
That is unbelievable.
Yeah.
That is unbelievable. Tommy is 38 years old only, became the pitching coach last year, worked his way up after, getting out of baseball as a pitcher. I think in 13 he's in the Cubs camp, was released, was their video guy for a few years, really got the trust of Darvish and Lester and these guys, then got promoted to pitching coach. And if you didn't think it was real, if you didn't think this thing can hurt you because you're young, we may have to play that several more times before we get out of here.
Yeah,
that's
Jesse.
As emotional as a thing we've heard in baseball in years.
It's a conversation we've been having almost all day about taking this seriously. And we were talking about how unless you know someone that's affected directly, it seems as if people are acting like it may not be something that could ever get to me. And you hear someone like that, why do you go public? Well, I want to go public so people understand what this is. It seems like even though the numbers are these huge astronomical numbers that are overwhelming, it seems like until you hear personalized stories from people that you know or you watch, like on TV or, you know, a Cubs pitching coach, like maybe it doesn't hit for everyone.
Does that change your mind? Is what did you folk? I want to hear from people. 312-332-3776. What went through your mind when you heard that? I mean, on one hand, you could say it's one person in baseball that we've heard gone through this. Maybe there were more, but there's one person that's gone public. Is it worth it to play, even though it's just one person? What are your emotions when you hear a pitching coach in tears, and now he has to go back to work? Maybe they're letting him take some more time.
Yeah.
And the rest of them have to go back to work with this possibility, you know, out there that they could get it. I mean, I don't know. Maybe it's not worth it.
Tommy Hadaviv also talked about should Major League Baseball restart, you know, after his experience with the COVID-19 virus, coronavirus. We will hear that answer coming up in 2 minutes.
This is Cap and Company on ESPN 1000, Chicago's home for sports.